We'll see what happens. Okay, sound looks good. You look good, that's what's important. Hello, everyone. This is Joel Friedlander from thebookdesigner.com, and I am really happy today to be here interviewing Dan Blank, a colleague of mine who is a consultant and a writer, and somebody who helps authors get their creative work done in a rational way. He's consulted with many authors over the years, and he has some really valuable lessons for authors. Dan is also the proprietor of We Grow Media, and his site can be found at wegrowmedia.com. It's a wonderful site with some excellent writing on all the issues that writers come up against when they confront their creative work. That's why Dan and I are talking today, because Dan has a new book that's just out last week, and it's called Be the Gateway. And Dan, that's where I wanted to start. You called your book Be the Gateway. Now, we are all familiar with the whole idea of the gatekeepers. Who are the new gatekeepers? Are the authors the gatekeepers? Are the readers the gatekeepers? So why did you pick that, and what exactly do you mean? What are you trying to communicate about Be the Gateway?
So first, it's lovely to be here. I always love chatting with you. So many authors and creative professionals I talk to are overwhelmed with this idea of marketing and social media and the endless list of things they're told they have to do to get a book deal, to self-publish, to get an audience. The gateway concept is what I came up with last summer in a really off-the-cuff video I did for a mastermind group I run. And it was this idea that when you create your work, when you create your book, whether that's a novel or a memoir or nonfiction, it's not just creating a product and then marketing it, hoping it gets on a bestseller list or hoping it sells a certain number, and then keeping your social media numbers up and going. You really think about a creative person and this vision for the book. Your book is something that should open something up for other people. If you're a novelist, you should be crafting characters that someone doesn't just buy the book and they read it and they read it on Amazon. You want that person to think about that character 4 years later when they're going through a rough time. If you're writing a nonfiction book, you want to give information not just that isn't retweeted immediately, but it changes the way they think about their field or a topic. And for memoir, I think it's this idea that it's that wonderful place between a novel, it's a story, but also nonfiction, where you're making someone else feel closer to understanding a topic. And I think with all of these, invariably what you're doing is helping them better understand themselves. And the idea of a gateway is that this is what creative work does. I love all of those little metrics and all those things about newsletters and blogs and all that stuff. But I think that where people feel unfulfilled in the idea of how they share their creative work, to me, the gateway is the solution to that. It's really thinking about it in a long-term way about what is the effect you're having on other people.
That's very aspirational, Dan. I mean, the idea that you could write something that would persist in people's minds and hearts for years, I mean, that's really a big aspiration in a sense. So the gateway, okay, so I understand a little bit about what you're saying, that you're creating works that lead people to an experience. So in a practical sense, though, I mean, here I am sitting at my desk with my keyboard and my coffee cup. Where is the gateway?
So that's a great question. So the book is broken up in three parts. It's this idea of first you craft your gateway, and then you open the gate, you make it available to people, and then you walk people through the gate. And what I mean from that in a practical sense is that you really have to understand the individual people you're hoping to reach. I think with so much of social media, people try to go viral. They try to copy these newsletter tactics, these social media tactics. And when you think of it, the actual person you're trying to reach, one individual person, you start thinking about, well, who are they? So one aspect is thinking about how do you reach that ideal reader? And some practical ways of going about that are thinking about comparable work. What other books does someone read that is like yours? What conferences do they go to? What movies do they watch? Where do they hang out online? What do they talk about? It's this idea of first understanding that landscape of where people are. And when you're crafting your gateway, it's not a business card or a website. Those could be components of it. What you're really trying to do is understand, why do people read this kind of book? What is the narrative going on in their head? Why do they read thriller after thriller or romance after romance? What is that thing they keep going back for? Because that thing is not just, oh, it's entertaining. It's entertaining, but there's something about how they view the world, what they like to experience, and how they view themselves. And when you go out practically and start doing that, you start understanding the language that they speak. Mm-hmm. So one exercise I'll have people do is this idea of finding comps, not just to understand the market, but to go onto something like the Amazon reviews for these other books. And what you're seeing there is the voice of the reader. And every time I do an analysis like this, what I'm finding is, what are the words that the reader uses again and again? Mm-hmm. And Amazon's great because you've got that little search field for the reviews, which I think is genius and underutilized. Because this is literally what readers are saying they loved. And it allows you to really not just think about how you can use that for how you talk about your book, how you title it, how you describe it, when you go to a conference or you go to a bookstore, how you talk about, you know, what you say to that person. Mm-hmm. You're understanding it in terms of, this is why it resonates. This is that connection that it's making. It's not just, oh, I wrote a thriller, people just want to be entertained, they like explosions. People read Jack Reacher and Batman comics and Harry Potter, not just because they're fun, but because they embody deeper things. And you, when you go to things like Comic-Con, and you see people dressed up, and you see them spending all this money, it's not just surface level. It goes so much deeper than that.
Absolutely. Yeah, well, that's very interesting. I mean, you know, the idea of comparable books has been around in publishing forever, basically. But it's always kind of a marketing idea or something in the marketing department or even before the book is signed. You know, I mean, that's a big part of your book proposal, et cetera. So you've kind of like turned that back around. Instead of using it for market intelligence, you're using the comparable books for reader intelligence.
Exactly.
So a lot of what you're talking about in that first section of the book is something that we are somewhat familiar with, getting to know your reader. And how crucial that is to actually, you know, writing something that's going to please them, you know, if you have a certain set of readers in mind. So I think that's really interesting. Now, you also say in the book that it's how you craft and share your work with others. And I thought that was really an interesting way to put it. And I wonder if you could talk about that a little bit, because the whole how you craft the work, how does that come into like this whole building the gateway, inviting people to the gateway, walking people through the gateway? I mean, it's a great metaphor, and it has a lot of resonance because of the whole gatekeeper, you know, metaphor itself. But, you know, what is that? There's a process you're walking people through in the book. Could you talk a little bit about that process, how that works?
Sure. I'm sure you've seen this 100 times. You go to a publishing conference and there's a pitch slam, and what you see is you're filled with hallways of people and they're trying to describe their book. And you see them basically failing at it. They're repeating it. Or you ask someone, oh, you're an author, tell me about it. And you get trapped in this 12-minute conversation that you don't even understand what it is, because that person doesn't know how to describe what they're doing. I'm not trying to change anyone's work. Your work is your work. I think that opening up, building your gateway and opening it up, it's the idea of, can you explain it to me in a way that doesn't just show me what you are about, but it connects it to what I really care about, the way where it lets me lean in and I really think about it. Two practical ways of looking at it are, whenever I talk to an author, two things I often find are missing are, one, a very, very clear sense of who their real reader is. Mm-hmm. Three people they know saying, you know, if I think of my reader, it's like my friend Diane. They can really tell you why she reads this kind of book and other books they kind of read. It's not this pie-in-the-sky perfect reader where all they do is read romance. Mm-hmm. They're a real person. And likewise, I find a lot of authors have not developed relationships with colleagues. They're in this marketplace. Publishing, in many ways, is a business, because I believe that you as a person can write and never publish, and that is wonderful. Mm-hmm. I grew up as an artist. I've done tons of art. I've recorded all this music, and it was never shared. It was just fun to create. But if you're going to operate in the business world, you're going to put it on Amazon, you're going to get a publisher, you're going to do that, you can't just be out there on your own. You need colleagues. You need to know other writers and other people who connect to your audience. And that's different for every genre or every topic or every type of book. And I often find that a lot of people have a book and they have social media and they don't really have any connections to actual readers. And they don't have any connection to actual colleagues who exist in this marketplace. So a lot of what I talk about, especially in the second part of the book, is really this idea of treating this like a profession. Of you would never have a job opening an Italian restaurant or being a carpenter or setting up a mortgage business with no colleagues and no customers and just say, I've got this great idea and I got a Twitter account and a website, I'm good. You would really forge these relationships.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. That's very interesting. And, I was reading your book and it really, one of the things that really resonated for me is the idea of a readership and an influence on the readership. And the reason I say that is because I've participated in, I've helped hundreds of people publish their books. And, you know, there's a certain section of books that were really not intended for a large audience. I mean, there are people who publish books that are really intended for a very small audience. And I love doing those books. Because I know, and I actually did a book once that was read by about 10 people. And that was the whole intent of the book. But, you know, it changed those people's lives. So I consider that a very successful publication. Now, when I say this to people, a lot of them kind of get a glazed look because that's not really what they're thinking. They're in that whole metrics thing, you know, like, well, how many copies did I sell? How much did I make today? You know, what's my Amazon rank? And all of this stuff that to me, you know, I don't know, that doesn't drive me personally. So the idea that you are a writer can be focused on an audience and creating a certain kind of personal change in a way, that to me is really powerful. And I think that was partly what you were getting at in the book.
Yeah, I would say it's a huge part. The book starts off talking about how essentially what you're saying, this idea of rejecting objects, tokens, and metrics, how I call it. This idea that I want an award, I want a review, I want a number of followers or a certain ranking. Now, these things are great. They're fine. You can want them. They're good milestones. But like you said, I think that too many people think that that's the goal. And they think if I can just get 10,000 followers and sell 1,000 books and get 40 reviews, then I'll be validated. They think that all of their, you know, uncertainty will go away, which it doesn't. And they think that, well, then it'll be easier. Man, if I had 10,000 followers, I could just tweet it out and I'd probably sell 15 books just like that. And you talk to people at 15,000 followers and realize, like, no, they are struggling to make it work. And it's not that it doesn't work. It's the idea that it's always work. At every level you get to, there's another level. And a lot of what I'm advocating for in this book is fulfillment, is to really think about why we're creating. And instead of putting that kind of, that kind of token in the middle saying, I'm seeking that, I'm thinking, well, those rankings are great. I'm going to look at my Amazon rankings. I do not blame anyone for doing that. But the goal is to truly help someone. And I want to think about how I can experience that and how I can help that happen.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, you know, there are many things that can be satisfying when you're an author. I mean, when I published my first book, I will tell you right out. I mean, I took my wife, we went by subway down to East West Bookstore on 5th Avenue, just below 14th Street. Not sure if it's still there. And we went there specifically because I knew they had my book in the store and I wanted to see it on the shelf. That is, you know, there's a certain kind of satisfaction you can get from stuff like that that helps you keep going. And I think that's important. But, you know, your motivation as a writer is something quite different. I mean, what makes you sit down? Look, I knew a lawyer used to get up at 5 a.m. and he would pretend he was out jogging. But he was actually sneaking down to the basement and writing his novel. So that's motivation. I mean, that's somebody who's driven to tell that story for a particular reason. And I think those are the kind of writers that you work with, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, the writers I work with are real people who might have a day job or another source of income. They've got kids or they've got health issues. The reality of what it means to lead a creative life is what I love focusing on. And it's not easy for you. It's not easy for anyone. And that's why for these tactics, to me, it really is a matter of not just hoping for I figured out this one Amazon trick.
Yeah.
Or this one button in Goodreads. And those are fine. I just see too many people distracted by it. And not just a little bit distracted, but overwhelmingly distracted, where they've sort of lost focus of the idea of actually living a life where they're connecting with people. In the 90s, I was a manager of a bookstore cafe. And we had all these different entertainment nights, and we clearly had books. And I was really involved in the artistic community. And there you saw what that was in a way of having relationships, of sharing one's work, of even if they weren't successful in terms of being career, they were striving towards that. Some of them made it there. Along that journey, they felt a sense of fulfillment. They felt a sense of being artistic. And I think that's different than the idea of being super duper confused about Facebook ads, but feeling that you're convinced because some other author did it, that if you don't figure out Facebook ads, you're going to fail. And it's the idea of like, well, that's not really the artistic experience. That now is very frustrating and overwhelming and lonely.
Well, you made a big point of that in the book about not imitating what other people are doing, otherwise known as, you know, going for the next shiny object, whether it's Facebook ads or BookBub or whatever it is. You know, when you hear or read about somebody who had a lot of success and you think, oh, well, all I have to do is imitate them. And I think it's really valuable that you include that. However, one thing I kept running into in your book that I want you to explain is the whole idea of avoiding best practices. Now, obviously, there's something to explain here because, look, I'm a guy who spent years trying to tell people we have best practices in book publishing. You should know what they are and follow them. So, Dan, you're kind of going up against my teaching here. What is it that you mean by best practices?
Yeah, I don't view it as anything going against.
Avoid?
It depends on what you're doing. So what I'm focusing on avoiding best practices in terms of how you connect with your audience and connect the book with an audience. What I see too often is the idea that people have no understanding of their audiences. They're not doing any real research. They're not showing up anywhere. They're not emailing anyone. They're not talking to readers. They're not talking to librarians or booksellers. They're not talking to other authors. There's no real sense of, I am a student of my audience. I'm forging connections. I'm asking questions. What there is instead is a lot of saying, how can I create buzz around my book? And they're creating essentially business cards. They're creating tweets and hashtags. And then the best practices they're following are these things where they have to mimic what some other author did. We did this email blast and we're going to give you the script and you're going to do that. And there's nothing wrong with the idea of getting someone's script and saying, oh, wow, that's one way to write an email I hadn't thought about. What I rail against is the idea that they don't have a real connection to their reader to then say, well, I have all this great data and all these great experiences because I'm really involved in that community. Going right back to the 90s when I was kind of part of the artistic community, I knew people, I could talk to people, I had all these anecdotes. If it was just sort of like, no, I walked by that cafe, looked like there's a lot of artistic people there that might like my book, what I'm going to do is I'm going to create a poster. And the best practice is make the poster triangular to get everyone's attention. I'll put a light on it. Then I'm going to walk in. I'm going to put that poster right down the middle of the room, and I think something's going to happen. That's how I view a lot of best practices, where people are copying this form without really connecting with actual people, mm-hmm. without building relationships, without thinking about, I've done primary research. The idea of having a script or reading a blog post on your site, that's wonderful. I just see too many people overwhelmed with a stack. I remember I used to go to conferences when I had a professional day job. You'd go to a conference, you'd be really inspired, come back with all these printed out decks, like this high mm-hmm. on your table, and you're just like amped to get to them. And then you check email, you go to meetings, and it's like 9 months later, they're all sitting there. And you still want to get to them, but you're overwhelmed. You don't really have that drive to do that. So that's what I mean by best practices. Clearly, there are some things like how do you build a porch? How do you design a book? Mm-hmm. Where best practices are essential mm-hmm. because it is a craft.
Well, thank you for rescuing my best practices mantra. I really appreciate that. You know, I'd like to talk a little bit about the actual publishing of the book because, I mean, if somebody had said to me, hey, Dan Blank's publishing a book, you know, my first question would have been, which publisher is publishing it? Because yeah. you've been, you know, working with big publishers for many years. You've consulted with them. They're authors. Many of the authors you work with are traditionally published. So I would just kind of assume that you would kind of get a contract from somebody and publish your book. But no, you decided to self-publish it. Why did you do that?
So 2 years back, I decided to write a book. And I was very excited about this. I wanted it to be a big book. Mm-hmm. I wanted to get a really good agent, get a really good publisher. So I spent a few months writing, and I wrote 85,000 words. I did all this research, doing interview after interview, collecting everything. And this was the book I was like, I really want this to be unique and different, big. And what I found was that project was crushed under its own weight. Mm-hmm. Those 85,000 words were all in the wrong order, and it became so big, my expectations became so big, that it became impossible to manipulate it and also live my life. Mm-hmm. So it kind of kept getting pushed to the side. And middle of last year, this gateway concept came up. I did a video. I got a lot of great reaction. I wrote a blog post, got a lot of great reaction. People started saying the word gateway back to me. And I said, you know, I still want to write a book. What if I trick myself? One thing I'm very good at is I have enough control. And I know there's no such thing as control, but just bear with me. If I had enough control over a creative project, I usually do pretty good. I'm pretty self-sufficient. I can bring people together. I'm very regimented in my schedule. Now, let me just take this concept I know people like. Let me expand it into a little book. I'll self-publish it. Let me just get that done where I'm really doing something bigger than a blog post. And I started doing that. And what I found was that every day I was writing, every single morning at 5:30 at Starbucks. I started working with a friend of mine who's a book coach, and she started kind of helping me kind of like really construct that. I brought in like a launch team of people to start giving me feedback on that. And what happened was because it was small, it became something fun. It became bigger, mm-hmm. but it was the whole idea of how can I craft something that just feels good to me and where it's not the type of thing where I'm saddling it with this idea of like, I want this to be big and get a big publisher where I'm almost courting failure. I'm almost asking for too much. What if instead I didn't put that on and just said, how can I help people? How can I take this concept I know resonates and really expand it and work with a book coach and do something better and have some editors come in and do that and bring in a designer and get a cover designer and we just see what that process is like instead of writing a blog post or a newsletter, mm-hmm. doing something more complete. And it's been a wonderful experience. I will add one more thing to that, which is my wife and I are expecting our second child in April.
Congratulations.
And that became a very, thank you. That became a very positive boundary because everything at a certain point with this book, once we found out, had to be, every decision has to get this book out before the baby's born. And that really was a wonderful boundary that allowed me to make every decision I did because, you know, can I do this? Like, well, can I do it before the baby's born? No. I guess we'll do that after the baby's born. And it really made it fun to just be able to say no to things instead of saying, how big can this book be? I'm going to do everything. And again, crushed under the weight of it of saying, I'm going to do a good little book and do as best I can before the baby's born.
Yeah, well, I really resonate with that idea because I'm kind of addicted to this concept of the minimum viable product, which I learned about in marketing. But, you know, you could really use it a lot of places. And, you know, it really is kind of the idea of how small can I, you know, instead of how big can I make this, how many things can I throw in this pot, you know, you really kind of how small can this be and still be effective, you know, actually do something for somebody. And it's an amazing discipline to learn to think that way. And oddly enough, Dan, I've been going through a similar process with a book that I'm going to be publishing this year. That's not about book publishing, but the same idea, something that really, really fed me, you know, and my, something I really wanted to write. You know, I've written over 1 million words on my blog, which was kind of shocking when I realized that, to be honest. But this is a whole different kind of project. So I really kind of resonate with what you're doing. Now, I'm also an avid reader of your weekly newsletter, which I recommend to people, and it's really one of the best newsletters out there, and partly because you share a lot of personal stuff. But I read your recent newsletter, and you said that you said you were a little over a week away from pub date, and there are a million things I could freak out about. Instead, I'm concerned over a few key things and ensuring I do them well enough. So I've got a lot of authors out there who want to know, what are those few key things?
So one of them is this interview. So last week I reached out to a bunch of people, and we set up these interviews and some promotion, that sort of thing. And I have a long list of other people. And last week I said, oh, I should reach out to more people. And I said, you know what? Instead of that, let me go back to the people that have already been so generous and make sure that I'm prepared, that it's on the calendar, I know how we're doing it, that I'm ready for the interview, that I've looked at their stuff, that I can answer their questions. And it's something where I said, instead of expanding, and it's not a negative thing to expand, it's not greedy, but it's like, let me take these people who've been generous, who are wonderful, and I've supported their work and they've supported mine, and make sure I'm going to do as best as I can with them. Likewise with just copy editing and copy editing and copy editing and copy editing, of just being so paranoid of having beta readers and different editors and myself, and just figuring out there's so much about this book that in retrospect I could say, I should have done that differently. I don't want there to be any egregious mistakes in the text. I want it to be as clear as it can. I don't want there to be like, wow, he didn't think to do that, or didn't he get an editor? I've had so many people look at this, and even then, I know that there will be mistakes in the book because there tends to always be a mistake. I just want to catch as many as I can.
It's tough. It's very hard to produce a book with no mistakes. It's very, I could tell you from experience, it's very, very challenging. And by and large, particularly these days, most people will not put in the time or the money to actually ensure that they've created a book that basically has no mistakes. So kudos to you. I also want to say, I mean, I think people should know, I mean, Be the Gateway, which kind of reminds me of a book from about 10 years ago you might remember called Be the Media. I don't know if you remember that. It was kind of a
No.
compendium type book, Be the Media. Anyway, I found that the book to be really inspirational. Now, I'd like people to know that there are many practical things in the book. You actually guide people, you give exercises, step-by-step things you can do at each step of the process. And that's all really great. I mean, we need that kind of guidance. But really, that wasn't the part that really inspired me. What inspired me was the stories about authors and your whole description of your process and how this whole thing works, about how you create a gateway, you lead people to the gateway. It really made me want to dive back into my own projects. So I think people should know that. It's a book that I think any author could profit from reading, and it's not a super long read. So that's good. We don't, you really have to wonder if we need more 400 page books on, like book marketing, the complete encyclopedia. Well, who the hell is going to read it? So good for you. Is there anything else you would like to tell people about the book, or do you have any launch events you're doing, or besides these interviews? I know you've got a lot on your mind right now.
Yeah, no, I've just been trying to make sure the book gets out there and share it on wonderful places like your blog and with your community. No, otherwise, I'm just going to be trying to share a lot of resources this month. A lot of what I want to do is have make myself available in videos and chats and to answer questions. So if anyone checks out my newsletter or my Facebook page, I'll be on there as much as I can, trying to give practical examples of things in the book and that sort of thing. So my whole goal this month is to not just promote the book, but be there for people who are opening it up and thinking, well, how do I translate this to what I'm doing? And to be able to answer questions around that.
Yeah, and that's really that would be very valuable, because in the book you make the point it isn't just for writers. You're talking to creatives. I mean, you could
Yes.
be a musician, or you could be a sculptor or a painter or something. You still kind of have the same process, And you make a point of talking about how artists really are storytellers. So whatever your medium is, it could be words, music, whatever, that you are really kind of telling a story for the people who are going to experience it. And I think that's awesome. So you're at wegrowmedia.com. How would people find you on Facebook?
It's if you type in Dan Blank, you'll find the Facebook page. It's got my face on it.
I recognize that from this interview. Okay, and anything else? Do you have the book? Is the book going to be in print and ebook?
Yeah, so it's ebook and prints. It's all through Amazon right now, and then I'll probably make it wider after the baby's born.
After the baby's born. That's a loaded sentence right there. All right, well, listen, Dan, it's really interesting to talk to you. I've really enjoyed the book. I haven't quite finished yet. I'm almost finished. But, you know, like I say, it really was inspirational for me. And that, you know, it's very satisfying to see, you know, we've been talking for years, you and I. I've talked to your groups often. And it's very exciting for me when somebody with your kind of expertise and the way you've spent years and years talking to authors and other creatives to actually put something out there to encapsulate your expertise and to offer it to people. That is the basic reason I love publishing. So exactly because of what you're doing. So kudos to you. I really want to wish you the best of luck with the book. And we'll be featuring it on the blog. Thanks for taking your time today. And it's been really great talking to you.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.